Good day, everyone. How you guys doing? Welcome to another DEI check-in. I am your host, as always, co-host Kofi Annan, here with my beautiful wife,
Shereem Annan. Hi, everyone.
What's going on? What's going on, y'all? So yeah, so we wanted to do another check-in today, dealing with the issue that's been going on in Tennessee regarding House delegates Justin Pearson and Justin Jones, who were both expelled from the House following their protest in favor of having some more reforms, gun reforms. We thought this was an important check-in to do because it's a perfect intersection of both of race, gun violence and the politics around gun violence, decorum, if you will, which we'll talk about a little bit later, and just the state of our democracy in general. So it's just like a perfect storm of topics just coming together all at once. So we wanted to talk about that and, get you guys opinions, give our opinions as to why this is a bigger issue that's worth really a deep dive into. So we're not going to be long, it's just about a little quick check-in, but here we go. So as far as the, like, what all happened, so I'll just give a little quick rundown as to what happened. So there was the shooting that you all are well aware of now that happened at a school in Nashville. And again, this is like the over 140-something mass shooting that we had just this year alone. And so that triggered a protest. And so the Justin Jones and Justin Pearson joined that protest on the House floor because they felt like their mics were being cut off and they weren't being allowed to voice their opinion or represent the interests of the people, particularly on the issue that has just is getting no real traction anywhere legislatively. And so in reaction to that, they were kicked out of their jobs, basically. Something that I didn't even know that could happen up until this point. But I guess we all got a little civics lesson that day, then realized that you could just get kicked out even though you're an elected official. So since then, Justin Jones was reinstated by the Nashville Metropolitan Council. And I think Justin Pearson he may get reinstated tomorrow, but they had to kind of go back to their electorate and have another process of the kind of like temporarily putting them back in office. So that's kind of where we stand right now. They're both vowing to continue to fight. Good for them. Hopefully we see some motion on this issue. But there's obviously a lot of questions as to whether or not this was constitutional. There was a joint letter that was put out by a lot of attorneys around the state, including former Attorney General Eric Holder, saying that this was unconstitutional. So it's not as cut and dry. It seemed like the punishment didn't fit the crime. They were punished more severely for this. So we're going to talk about that because I think it has this has some parallels in a lot of things that we see in other areas in the country, not just with elected officials, obviously, but how Black people kind of held to a different standard and how they're punished more harshly for the same things that their white counterparts do. I failed to mention that their white counterpart in this case,
Gloria Johnson,
she also did the same thing and she was not kicked out. So.
Right. And just to kind of talk a little bit about that, she was actually asked a question, you know, why do you think you were not expelled? And she pretty much said, it probably has something to do with the color of my skin, right? So she acknowledged that there's most likely something to say about that, right? The other thing just to point out is that both Justin Pearson and Justin Jones have alluded to the fact that they necessarily didn't always feel welcome, right, in their roles as legislators. So this obviously was the most serious, the expulsion, but there have been other things where they said that there were rules changed and how things are done, right? And they feel like some of that has to do with, you know, them taking these seats. Justin Jones was a previous activist, right? So that could be that could have something to do with that situation. So, you know, just kind of wanted to talk through that as well. And when we look at the history of expulsions, you mentioned that, like, we're getting a civics lesson. Didn't know this was possible, right? So this doesn't happen that often. So just some examples of when this has happened in history. I'm going to go way back to 1866 with President Andrew Johnson, when he wanted the Tennessee to be the first state to ratify the 14th Amendment and be reinstated into the Union. And there were six lawmakers who were opposed to that. So they got expelled. So if we go, you know, we're looking at situations. So
we got to go back to the 1800s.
We got to go back to the 1800s. Now, there have been some other cases, like from the 80s, you know, in the 2000s as well. Some other examples have been bribery, harassing politicians and interns, and a federal fraud charge.
So we're talking about crime.
Right. So when you think about those things compared to these gentlemen and lady, because it was the Tennessee Three, right? They were protesting because of the constant gun violence, you know, and it's hard to wrap your head around how that could even compare to some of these other things I just mentioned, right?
Yeah, I mean, not to cut you off, but I mean, I think we probably should take a little bit of a moment here, even though this segment is necessarily just about gun violence, but it is the core thing. It is the driver, the thing that led to all of this. So I think we should probably take a moment just to acknowledge that this is a problem that's just ongoing issue. We just seen another shooting just in Louisville, Kentucky yesterday.
So that actually, the Louisville incident marked the 15th mass shooting in the last 100 days. Mm. And so far, we're about 147 mass shootings in the U.S. So
more shootings than days.
More shooting than days.
More than a mass shooting. And that's just a mass shooting.
Right.
I mean, I think we also should take a moment to acknowledge that, yeah, like the mass shootings get a lot of headlines, but they're still the minority of all the gun violence. Like, we still have a lot of gun violence that happens all the time, particularly in the Black community. And actually, just today alone, there was a shooting at a funeral of someone who was killed. So this person was killed, was shot. And someone or some group of people showed up at his funeral in Washington, D.C., just today, and shot and killed somebody at the funeral. Like, it's really bananas just how the state that we're in. Like, there's just no
it's hard to even, like, it's emotionally draining, right, to continue to hear these things, you know, with gun violence. And you don't hear this stuff in other countries. It's like, why are we just so stubborn in refusing to do something about it? It is just, it's too much.
So there was actually a study that also released today. I think it was a study conducted, I forgot who conducted the study actually. But they said that there were almost more than half of Americans were impacted by gun violence directly. Either they knew someone that was killed by gun violence, or they seen a shootout or something like that. Like, over half, like that. So it's not just some figment of your imagination. It's not just about news media. Like, there really are a significant uptick in gun violence, and the trend doesn't seem to be going anywhere anytime soon. On that note, too, I know, like, the counter to all of this is the major roadblock to all of this is usually the Second Amendment. And I also wanted to take this opportunity to mention that there was a book that I just read called The Second. I forgot the name of the author, but the book is called The Second, talking about the Second Amendment. And I thought this was like one of the most interesting things that I read in a while, because the point of the book was to talk about it dispels the narrative that the Second Amendment was put in place in order to prevent government tyranny, right? So like that's the narrative that's always put out there. It's a kind of like a barrier to government tyranny. People want to make sure that the government doesn't come in and take control of them or whatever, right? But it actually dispels that, and it actually shows that the root of the Second Amendment, the reason that it said that they wanted militias to continue to have their guns was to prevent slave rebellions. Like, so the Southern states wanted to ensure that they were able to have these militias with guns in order to prevent slave rebellions or uprisings. And they use these militias to hunt down runaway slaves and things like that. And that was the kind of like the bargaining chip, if you will, that kept the Union together. And so without that, the South would not have signed on to being a Union. And so that was something that was a compromise, I guess. So it's a really fascinating twist on something that I personally had not heard about before. I think I've never heard it, on mainstream media and things like that. But I really think it's important because it ties back to race and, mm-hmm. and slavery and the founding of our country was not just this innocent race neutral thing, which also kind of, you know, it goes into a lot of stuff. But I think that was always fascinating when I hear people, particularly white people, talk about how near and dear the Second Amendment is. It really shows where that came from. So, but yeah, we'll move on from and get back into the meat of the discussion here.
Yeah, some other areas where, you know, this conversation kind of dovetails into other things, right? So this is an example of how, you know, obviously, you know, Black males that are young too, these young men are, they're young in age, are treated harshly and held to a higher standard. We see that in the criminal justice system where sentences imposed on Black males and the federal systems are nearly 20% longer than those imposed on white males convicted of similar crimes. In the federal system, 71.3% of LWOP prisoners are Black.
It's life without parole.
Prisoners are Black. So there are definitely parallels here, right? And then even going into the workplace,
there's some studies that show like a 1 in 4 employees report that they experienced racial discrimination. So that number actually goes up when you're talking about younger people. So I don't know if it's because younger people are more in tune to, you know, are more conscious, more aware of what discrimination looks like and aren't willing to put up with it. I'm not sure why young people feel like they've been more discriminated against than older people. But I still think it's a pretty staggering number, the fact that 1 in 4 African-American employees feel like they've been treated differently or discriminated against in the workplace.
For sure. And like, just a personal story, I've been in the workforce for a pretty long time. And even personally, sometimes feeling like you have to work twice as hard, you know, to prove yourself. You have to work twice as hard to get promoted, right? Where you see other colleagues around you that are getting promoted that aren't doing all the things you're doing, right? They're not putting in the extra hours. They're kind of floating by and sometimes just, you know, doing the bare minimum to get by. But those are the individuals that seem to get promoted, right? Where in order to be seen, it's like you have to prove yourself. Like I actually was told this in a job I had a couple years ago where I was promised a promotion. I didn't get the promotion. when I was promised a promotion. And when I asked the question, I was told, well, you need to do things to make you more visible. I'm like, I can't get more visible than running a program for the CEO. I meet with the CEO on a quarterly basis. How much more visible can I get in the organization? You know? So it's really, you know, it's troublesome. It's troublesome. And like I said, I personally have experienced this scenario. I also have seen, just because I'm in the field of HR, that a lot of times, you know, Black employees are not always given the same grace when mistakes are made than their white counterparts. It's quick for a leader to put them on a performance improvement plan, right? And label them as a performance issue. I walked into a situation where I was supporting a group. And when I took over that group, I quickly found that most of the Black leaders in that group were on performance improvement plans. So I had to ask the question, why are all these people on performance improvement plans? You know, I never got a straight answer. But so it is a serious issue, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that this is an example of something, not necessarily in a corporate environment, but this situation that these legislators experience are things that people are experiencing daily in the workplace.
Yeah. I mean, and I'll give you another example of like the disproportionality on how Blacks are treated in the criminal justice system. I think this has been well documented over the years, but so the crack cocaine versus powder cocaine disparity, you know, so if you're caught with powder cocaine, you're sentencing, if you're caught with crack cocaine, you're going to get a sentencing that is 100 times harsher than someone who's caught with powder cocaine. Barack Obama, he did bring that down to, or at least got legislation passed that brought that down to 18-1, but it's still an 18-1 disparity. So you, and that's important because legislators know that African-Americans, poorer people in general, are more likely to use crack cocaine because it's cheaper versus powder cocaine. So, you know, here you are basically essentially the same drug, committing the same crime, and you're still getting sentenced at a much, much harsher rate. And so, like, again, the gentleman in Tennessee, and the white lady, the white representative, she didn't get punished at all, basically. And they got basically the maximum, the harshest mm-hmm. possible penalty for something that's relatively benign. So, yeah, we see these same disparities in education. You know, mm-hmm. there have been plenty of studies that show that Black students are more likely to be punished at, for doing the same things as their white peers. Or punished more harshly, even referred to the criminal justice system for a lot of things that their white peers probably wouldn't get in trouble for at all. Or if they do, they just kind of get a little slap on the wrist.
But even academically, too, like, I feel like, I mean, you know, a lot of times, you know, Black students are the problem children, right? Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, sometimes they're, you know, considered the problem children. Sometimes they're not given access always to the same, you know, education curriculum. And so, yeah, they're labeled faster. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. yeah, these things are, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'd love to hear from y'all. What do y'all think? You know, is this more about race? Is this about decorum? Is this about... is this about guns? Like, what do you think the core problem here is with this? You know, I'd love to get your feedback because there's definitely some intersectionality between all these different issues. So yeah, we'd love to hear from you. Leave a comment in the comment box. And we love to interact with you. Other than that, check out our website, 42fightingwords.com. Shoot us an email, info@42fightingwords, or follow us on the social media. Give us a like. Everything is at 42fightingwords. Or Instagram and TikTok is 1942fightingwords. All right. So look forward to hearing from you. And thanks for tuning in.
All right. Bye, everyone.